here with us today, and rather unexpectedly, too.
Is my microphone on?
Yes, it is, Mr. Watney. We had to revise our log here a little bit because he has got to leave right away. Is Mr. Clyde R. Watney, the regional Eastern Interbureau Coordinator of Administrative Activities for the Northeast States. And Clyde, Hap, you don't mind if I call you Hap. It's nice to see you back here again.
No, indeed, I do not. First of all, I want to thank you and your employers for making this expensive radio time free to me in my office.
Your office. Hap, it's been some 6 months since you were here last, and I imagine your field representatives have sent in a good many reports since we talked to you.
Well,
how do things shape up?
Things are shaping up very well, Bob. Of course, the summertime is very difficult for my field men because so many people are not home when we call at their front door to help coordinate the interbureau coordinating activities.
I almost anticipated that that would be your problem. However, during the winter, you must have arrived at some...
During the winter, important. Our problems, of course, are snow and rough traveling, walking, and driving conditions. Actually, we find that in the early and late fall probably are the nicest times, or in the spring of the year, to contact the people that we must contact in order to fulfill our duties as interbureau coordinators in the bureaus.
Well, what does the latest bureau consensus seem to point to? In other words, what, according to your last survey, shapes up as the...
Well,
thing to look
the
for this summer?
Drafts that we're making now, of course, all have to be put onto paper. They have to be summarized, cataloged, and then sent off to Washington, where they made a permanent record of our office of interbureau coordinating.
Well, prior to collating, I imagine that you see personally all of these various reports, don't you?
It's my responsibility as the manager of my particular division. Incidentally, I have the New England states, New York, New Jersey, and Indiana.
Still, mm-hmm.
And it is my responsibility to check and to make sure that all figures are accurate, correct, and in proper form before they're forwarded to my immediate supervisor at the Interbureau Coordinating Office in Washington.
Pentagon, is your office headquarters still at Barre, Vermont?
That's right. And I'm very pleased to say that we have four desks in there now.
Wonderful.
I've gone ahead and hired two more girls. And
how many does that make in the total staff that you have?
Well, the two girls.
I see. And have the telephones been installed yet? I remember you were having...
No, we're still having a little difficulty with that. We have a party line there now.
Uh-huh. Well, that should make it a little bit difficult to...
I'm trying to bring the government... or rather have the government take a firm hand so that
I
we
see.
Can get a private line. And as much.
Well, now, to sum it all up in a word, Hap, and that's about all the time we'll have is for a word, how would you say the outlook looks?
I'd say the outlook, generally speaking...
Is what?
Is going to be good.
All right, thank you very much. Clyde L. Hap-Watney, Regional Interbureau Administrator of the Coordination Division.
Again, I want to thank your employers
We're
for making
happy.
This time available in my
very
office.
Glad.
We really appreciate it.
Look for you again, Hap.
Well, it's been a long time since we've checked on our private weather forecaster stationed atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire. We're speaking of the good Cliff Fleming. So why don't we call him in now and see how things are going. So come in, please, Cliff, atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
Bob and Ray in New York calling Cliff Fleming at the Bob and Ray Weather Station, Mount Washington, New Hampshire.
Well, let me try it. This is Bob and Ray at New York calling in Cliff Fleming atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
This is valuable time that we're wasting here, and unfortunately we didn't know that our lines were in such...
I don't know why it is always, whenever we're trying to call in somebody, we always run into this difficulty. Now, they can go to Washington, they can go out to Las Vegas, they can go any place at all, and it always happens...
Now, Dave, as you know, summer arrived here at Mount Washington, as it did in most other places, bringing with it some rather cold weather. On Monday, we had a temperature of 26 degrees and a frost in some northern portions of New England, Dave. However, to... Yes, Dave.
Cliff, are you broadcasting from the Weather Bureau atop Mount Washington?
That's right, the Bob and Ray Weather Station, Dave.
Well,
Miss Fleming wanted me to tell you how sorry she was she couldn't be here to chat with you as she sometimes has.
Well, Cliff, the reason I asked...
Yes, Dave.
Why, it seems to me that you're standing beside a busy highway.
Oh, no. Can you hear that, Dave?
Yes,
that's
very good.
That's an acoustical phenomena, Dave. Those cars you're hearing are some 4 or 5 miles down the mountain.
Is that so?
That's right, Dave. They're traveling along Route 18, but due to the clearness of the air and the acoustical phenomena connected with it, Dave, we get the sound of the cars as if they're going right by the weather station.
What do you know about that?
What's that, Dave?
Hey, what do you know about that?
Nothing except it's an acoustical phenomena, Dave. The clearness
so?
Of the air or something like that. It's of a mirage, Dave.
Uh-huh.
They sound as if they're right on top of her. Wait a minute, Dave. There was one.
There is one. One was very close there.
I think one went through the kick. Those cars, Dave, aren't as far away as I thought they were.
They're right there.
There's no acoustical phenomena connected with this whatsoever, Dave.
It probably is a detour or something.
Must be something like that. Well, they're getting a little closer, Dave. I think I'd better send it back to you in New York. Happy weather.
You've been listening to Clifford Fleming, Bob and Ray's weather forecaster, stationed top Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
A dangerous speed to keep on up there, isn't it?
Wally Ballou today is covering a great event that we thought would be very interesting to most of you people, and that is the now famous submarine races held along the eastern shoreboard up there somewhere around Maine. But Wally will tell us exactly, so if you'd come in, please, Wally Ballou. This is New York calling Wally Ballou along the coast of Maine. Please, come in, Wally.
This, of course, is regatta time all over the country, and this is something a little bit different, I think.
Second bot.
Yeah.
I thought he was coming in. Go ahead. Let's try it once more.
Baloo, off Bath Maid, where in just a moment you'll hear the starting signal, the throwing of a rock into the river, which signifies the start of the submarine race. They'll race from the point where we're standing to some half a mile up the beach, and where Artie Skirmahorn is standing by with his portable microphone. Now one of the officials is ready to drop the rock. And in a moment, you'll hear the rock drop, and the submarines will submerge as this crowd of some 1,400 people goes, and there they go under. They've submerged, and you'll hear the cheers. They start on their way. They're both now completely submerged, and heading for the finish line, a race against time. Here's one of the spectators standing over here. How do you like so far the race today, sir?
This is a lousy spectator sport. I paid $1.10, including tax, to sit in the grandstand, and all I do is go out of the water. I see them start, and that's the end.
Well, how else is the submarine going to race anyway?
Well, they could race on the top, couldn't they?
Well, that would prove the true prowess of the submarine under actual conditions.
Well, I think it's a miserable spectator sport.
Now, down at the other end of the finish line, Artie Skirmahorn, my broadcasting partner, and his portable microphone.
Skirmahorn here at the other end of the line, where just a few moments we expect one of the two submarines to cross the finish line first. It's very hard for me to determine from my particular vantage point just who is in the lead at this moment.
Can you see anything, Artie? Hello, Artie.
Pete Skirmahorn back. Don't interrupt me, please, Wally. You ruined the front of my...
Well, I was wondering if you could see anything from where you're standing.
I was just saying, it's very difficult for me to see anything from where I'm standing. The water, I would estimate, here is probably 30 feet deep, and just enough for the submarines to... I might point out, too, that the tide is coming in. When I first went on the air, I was on what appeared to be dry land. I'm now in water halfway up my legs. However, I shall stay here until
Hello, Hardy. Sorry to cut in here. I hear a mighty cheer going up from the crowd along the bank, so they must have seen something. I think periscopes are up, and we should have a winner at any minute now. Can you see him?
Tide is running very high now. I only hope you can hear me. It's up to my shoulders, and as I understand, along this particular part of the Atlantic Ocean, this particular shore, they have some very high tides, but I'm going to try to get out of here now.
For sure.
Hardy Skirbohorn seems unable to announce the winner, and since we can't see it from here, we'll return you to New York.
Well, we're getting our signal now from the producer inside, which means that Wally Ballou is all set at Albany, Oregon, for broadcast from the log rolling contest out there. So come in, please, Wally Ballou. Well, what did that signal mean, then? Is it time for Wally Ballou? All right. Now to...
Hello.
Now, why does this happen always to us when all these other people can...
I don't know. They can go on remotes.
Hold it, Bob.
Yeah.
Just to go ahead. We take you now to Albany, Oregon, where
Wally Ballou here at Albany, Oregon, where the great national log rolling contest is under full swing. I think... there goes one now. We haven't as yet had an interview with a gentleman whose chances seem to be very good. Your name is Pierre, is that right?
That's right, there, Pierre, the half-breed.
And, Pierre, I understand that you hold some sort of a championship.
I would stay on top of the log there along this.
How long was that?
Well, I was about, I don't know that. I was about, I would stay on there about a day there once.
Well, what happens now to find a winner? These fellows just keep rolling logs all day until they all fall off but one? Let me put it a little more plainly, Pierre. You stay on the log until you fall off, right?
You stay on the log there until you go by the finish line on it there. You was trying to move your log.
Oh, I see.
Stay on top and not go in the water.
I see.
If you was to get your feet wet, that's okay, though. But you get your shoulder wet there means you fall down on it.
You can't get your feet wet, ladies and gentlemen. It's one of the rules. Your feet can't be wet, but your shoulder can.
Well, if your shoulder gets wet on it there...
Then you're already in.
It would be that you've fallen over.
What do you do for training for this kind of work, Pierre?
You tread on top logs. What else you think? I mean, can you train there? You've got to practice on top of the log. And with the water, the cascade was run by there.
Now you're going to put your log in the water and start out, is that right? And they'll time you from the time you start.
That's right there. They put the log on top of the water, and then I will step on it and keep it spinning.
Oh, Pierre has put the log into the water here at the side of the river. How deep is the water there, Pierre?
The water here is so deep there, it's about 2 feet on it.
2 feet?
It was go out and come very deep, though. You go way out there. It was... on top of the head.
I understand, Pierre. Now, how do you go about getting out of the log? By that I mean, how do you depart?
I was using these hobnail boots there. There was good to bark on it.
Well, now you're going to get on it, right?
I'm on it now.
Oh, he's standing on it now.
Now I'm spinning.
Now the log starts
to spin.
The log's
on top of me.
And there he goes, down the river.
How is this qualified, man?
He's disqualified. The champion is disqualified. And now this is Wally Ballou returning you.
Ray has taken a mobile unit out to an observatory close by to New York for a chat with Wilbur Feely, astronomer, who will give us some of the sky-watching tips for this month. And if you can hear me, Ray, come in.
I can't hear you very well, so I'm going to start right now. According to my watch, it should be just about the time to go on. Bob, I have Wilbur Feely here, who's going to tell us a little something about the stars in the heavens during the summer season.
Hello, Wilbur.
Hello, Bob.
Wilbur, tell us, just what can we look for in the skies in the ensuing few weeks?
Ray, Mercury is speeding away from us on its trip to the far side of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Superior conjunction.
I'll be a monkey's uncle.
What's that?
I see.
Now, for the first few days of this month, it will be low over the horizon to the north of east as the dawn brightens.
What is this, Mercury?
Mercury.
Now, how can we spot Mercury,
Let's
Wilbur?
Turn our attention now to Venus, which becomes a brilliant morning star, very conspicuous north of east about 5 a.m. after the 15th of July, and reaching greatest brilliance at month's end.
Uh-huh. Well, how can we tell Venus, say...
Mars now becomes the most fascinating object in the sky, and most of this issue is devoted to it, which I'm reading from.
What's that, Wilbur?
A map on page 2.
Well,
and articles on other...
Well, you see, that's not doing any good for radio.
Jupiter.
Wilbur?
Jupiter is still brilliant in the western sky.
Sure
as
it is.
The evening dusk deepens, but it's seen constantly lower and leaves our night sky early next month.
Uh-huh.
That's about the picture as I see it now.
Well, Wilbur, this is radio, and you're referring us to a map. Doesn't help us at all. I was asking you how we could tell Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn.
Ray,
from...
here's an interesting fact.
Sure.
Did you know that on the 4th of July at 9 p.m., the Earth reaches aphelion, its greatest distance from the sun?
On the 4th of July?
Yes, and we were closest to the sun last January. 91 million miles.
Well, how do you account...
And some odd.
How do you... Well, I'd say some of them are, but how could you account for the fact that it's warm then, Wilbur, in the summer, and cold in...
Because it's summertime.
I'm afraid I can't conduct this interview. The heck with this.
Some of you may remember, I think a year ago, we had a guest here on Mother's Day whose hobby was writing songs. He wrote a very beautiful tribute to his mother on that date, and because Father's Day was prominent this week, we asked him to come back again and see if he's added any songs to his repertoire. Mr. Claude R. Yogi Hathaway, it's a pleasure to see you again.
How are you, everybody?
I'll never forget that day that you recited your song, words to it, to your mother. Yogi, why do they call you that, incidentally? I don't remember.
Well, I got hit by a screaming foul ball off the bat of Yogi Berra.
I see.
It changed my parents considerably.
Mm-hmm. And so now they call you Yogi, is that right?
That's Mr. right. Hathaway? It's kind of a little gag.
Now, you know what we're all looking forward to is to see whether or not you have come up with a song for Father's Day this year. As you did for Mother's Day last year.
Well, I have. I won't sing it because I couldn't do justice to it. I'm not a very good singer.
Remember, your Mother's Day song is My Old Lady is One Heck of a Gal.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one is called Listen, Dad, with all the palaver aside, you're okay.
That's the title of it, huh?
That's right.
You want to go through part of the chorus?
Yeah. Listen, Dad, all the palaver aside, you're okay. Because when the gang goes out at night like... And you wanted to go along. Sometimes you didn't, and you stayed home with Mom and the kids, which is a little bit of okay, dear Dad. Another thing, Dad, you're all right.
Well, that certainly sounds like a comer, and one that we may be hearing on the hit parade in the months to come. I certainly hope so, Claude R. Yogi Hathaway, and... Maybe next holiday you'll drop around with another.
Gray in your hair, Dad.
Oh, there's more.
It's matched.
Well, I don't think we have the time right now. Can you just wrap it up with the last line?
With the gold in your smile.
Well, it's not going to be long before we're in the midst of political conventions, and as a sidelight to... Convention News, we thought you might be interested in meeting our next guest, and we've asked to drop by today, Dr. Sherman Y. Maycroft, who has been hired by one of the parties, and we're not at liberty to mention which one, to give advice to speakers who will be making addresses during convention. Dr. Maycroft, welcome to our Bob and Ray booth.
Well, thank you very much.
I wonder if, first of all, you tell us exactly why you were hired by the party and what you are planning to do.
Well, the reason for my being hired by the party, they, is to teach the orators, tours, how to speak, eek, when there is no PA system where they are speaking, ing.
In other words, when they make stops on trains or greet people at unusual places where there are no microphones, no public address system. You teach them to speak so that they will sound as if there is. Is that right?
That's right. Hi.
Well, it seems to be quite an art to this. How long have you been doing this sort of thing, and how did you start, Dr. Maycroft?
Well, it all started when I was up at the Yankee Stadium for an old-timers game. Aim. One of the sportscasters was standing by second base, ace, and introducing some of the old-stars, ours. And it hit me then.
You felt that there was a crying need for someone to train people to talk that way.
I felt that way, eh?
You talk this way all the time, Dr. Maycroft?
No, just to emphasize what I teach. H.
Well, would you give us just a little sample of the opening lines of a speech after the student has taken your course in public speaking without a microphone?
My dear voters, stirs. When you march to the polls, on Tuesday next,
I think we get the idea.
Your work is
going to be very prominent in the weeks to come. Thank you, Dr. Sherman Y. Maycroft, for being our guest here today.
You're entirely welcome. Come.
Now then, it's time to call in our good correspondent, Walden H. Ballou, or known coast to coast as the beloved correspondent, Wally Ballou. He's up in Herkimer, New York, again to check with the good Professor Groggins up there. So come in, please, Wally Ballou.
This is W.W. Ballou, north of Herkimer, New York. In the pasture outside Professor Groggins' home. And I understand, Professor, you're going to make another attempt to get your rocket ship off the ground.
Well, that's right, Wally. I have been checking through with my Skywatcher schedule, and this is just about the appropriate time for me to take off to go to the moon or to Mars or someplace like that.
So you've been waiting until this time when everything was as well off as it could be before you decided to leave, eh?
Well, I wanted to wait for a favorable route as far as the zodiac is concerned. You see, in September, the planet Mars will be just a little bit more than 35 million miles away.
Well, that's pretty close by comparison, isn't it?
I'd be a fool to miss the opportunity.
Well, of course.
In June, it'll be 875,000.
It's almost twice as much.
Yes.
It's half as far. How fast a speed will you get up in this rocket ship?
I figure 45 to 50 miles an hour.
Uh-huh. Well, now, what advantages have you added to the machine which will assist you in making a successful flight?
I've installed linoleum on the floor,
uh-huh,
and I've got a rocker chair in there now.
Have a cushion on it?
Yes. There's a cushion on the rocket chair. And a little cushion up around the top part that hits me right about the neck so that I can sit there and rock on my trip.
Well, should be very comfortable, then. You about ready to... I notice there's no newspaper people around to witness this departure. Only radio.
Well, you notice on this other new rocker, I have put sides on it because I fell off my rocker. You remember...
Several months ago, I remember that. That was when they wrote you up in some of the medical journals. I notice you're wearing overshoes, Professor. Any reason for those?
Yes, it's winter in Mars now.
I see. Well, now I'm going to step back because I know the powerful rockets, once they're ignited by your motor system...
Magnetos.
Huh? I know that there's going to be a big flareback. So if you'll just shut the door, we'll say goodbye, good luck, and...
Goodbye, America, and be looking for me in the skies above you.
Now he shut the door. Maybe you can hear the powerful... I'm going to step back here a little bit. The powerful magnetos, I think he called them. He's rapping on the window of the rocket ship now.
Well, Colonel, open the door for me.
What's the matter, Professor?
I don't know. I think the matches are wet.
Well, better luck next time. Our time is up now, though. So this is W.W. Ballou returning you to...
Now over to our sports desk and our beloved sports commentator, Biff Burns.
Thank you very much, Ray. This is Biff Burns, fans, and I've just flown in from the Armitage Country Club in Millinocket, Maine, to bring in my special guest. As you know, this is National Golf Day around the country. I thought it might be good to get a look at another phase of golf, and an important one, too, the caddy. And we have with us here at our sports microphone the world's oldest lady caddy. And I wonder if you'd come in, ma'am, and tell us your name.
Well, my name is Miss Bernice Douglas.
Miss Douglas, you've been caddying now for some 38 years, almost as long as golf has been popular in this country.
Oh, well, golf has been popular, for longer than 38 years. But it was certainly just starting to grab onto the fancy of the person who had more leisure time, in order that he could probably, with the increased leisure time, get to the golf course, and thereby, with leisure time, to... Yeah.
What prompted you to become a caddy in the first place, inasmuch as that job had been handled by boys or men up until the time you entered the field?
Well, there was... Well, with increased leisure time, you found that there were more people going out on the golf course, and they were paying caddies to tote around their golf bags and so forth, and I was a strong lady.
Have you ever had any unusual experiences on the golf links as you've carried the bags for some of the world's top players?
Well, now, whatever you'd consider interesting experiences, I don't know. You see, with increased leisure time now, you find...
I think you went into that, lady. Now, let's get to another phase. How many miles do you think you've walked in your 38-year career as a lady caddy?
Well, I carried a pedometer one weekend, and back several years ago, and then I just tried to use that more or less. Because, you see, with leisure time, you're finding... many more people outdoors, generally on the golf course.
Become a very popular sport, of course.
Because of the increased leisure time. And the pedometer that I carried showed that I walked over 30 miles one weekend.
Have you ever caddied for any famous golfers, like Bobby Jones or anyone we've...
The most famous golfer I've carried is Mickey Rooney. Well,
now,
small.
For all of the young girls listening into our sportscast today who may hope to grow up and become lady caddies, can you give them any advice?
Well, I'd say now is the time to start when you're young. Get to know the different golf clubs. Get to know what clubs are to be used in certain times. Get to know... You see, with increased leisure time...
Well, I see our time is just about up here now, and we want to thank you very much for flying in from Millinocket, Maine, for a very interesting interview. And this is Biff Burns saying, until next time, this is Biff Burns saying, so long.
Oh, was our microphone on? Well,
yeah.
Fine. We have dispatched Wally Ballou up to the huge Coliseum here in New York, where I think this National Home Sewing Contest gets underway. All these women, we understand, are going up there and sewing things with big prizes. So, Wally, if you're standing by up there, come in, please. Engineer, would you check again?
We have more trouble every week this way.
Wally Ballou, please, at the Coliseum in New York, and right in New York, too. In New York.
It's not more than a mile away. I don't think it's that far.
Well, how do you like that? Again, this is Bob and Ray.
Wally Ballou here at the Coliseum, and we're not going to talk with one of the lady sewers, but instead a gentleman who has entered in the seamstress contest here. Well, it's not exactly seamstress, is it, Mr. Clancy?
Well, not for me, and I don't like the way he keeps winking at your engineer, you know, fella.
Well, it was just that I was surprised to see a man sitting at one of these sewing machines and
What's
making...
What's so funny about it?
Well, it's supposed to be for women, I understood. Ladies who sit at home and make dresses and make the family's clothes for themselves, thereby qualifying for a first prize of $25,000.
Well,
What do you keep winking at your engineer?
Well, it's this ruffled apron that you're making on your sewing machine.
What do you think, I'm a sissy, something like that? Because I'd just soon hang a fat lip on you as look at you.
But how did you ever get into this competition?
Well,
you sewed all your life?
Yeah, one time the sewing machine went on a blank at home. The old lady asked me to fix it, and I fixed it, and I discovered it's kind of a lot of fun getting them their patterns and making aprons and
suits. Is that to make that suit you have on?
You're working at the engineering
guy. Oh, it's very nice looking. So what is it?
Well, I'm telling you,
made out of dimity or something, isn't it?
It is dimity, and I didn't come here to have somebody make a monkey out of me,
Scallops, lapels, and everything. What are you going to make for the competition here? What are you entering as your big project?
I'm going to make...
Now, you're
winking. You do something funny, fella.
I wasn't saying anything. You winked at me when you said it.
I'm going to make an apron.
An apron? Have you picked out the... No!
I warned you about that, fella. I'm going to saw, and I don't want anyone making a monkey out of me coast to coast.
They seem to have cut the line to the Coliseum just when the story was getting interesting. Maybe we'll go back for a follow-up later from Wally Ballou.
And now, once again, back to the Coliseum in New York, the scene of the great, what is it they call it up there?
Home Sewing Show, National Home Sewing Contest.
National Home Sewing Show Contest, and our correspondent, Wally Ballou, on the scene.
Wally Ballou again, this time partying with one of the lady infants, Mrs. Henrietta Bastel Logan of the Chias Maze.
What's the matter with you?
Oh, nothing, Mrs. Logan.
Got a fat lip you have?
Well, it's a little bit of trouble we ran into on our last broadcast, but we would like to have a few facts from you about what the sewing contest means we were important for the make for us.
Well, I'm trying to emphasize in the dress I'm making the importance of thread.
The importance of thread? Thread.
T-H-R... Is it
E-D
or E-A-D?
E-A-D, I think.
What?
E-A-D.
Yeah. That's right, thread. T-H-R-E-A-D.
And, what
kind of... you look like you've been lacerated. Isn't that a contusion?
No, we ran up against a rather tough contestant a little while ago and had a little trouble.
Yeah.
A little trouble broadcasting. Well... What are you going to use with this colored thread, anyway?
Well, I'm going to...
Hey, are you waking up my engineer?
Well, we think it's funny the way you sound.
I can't help the way I sound.
What? Well, don't get snippety with me.
Right now, I'm going to switch it to the other end of the Coliseum at Webley Webster.
That'll be funny to go to Webley and ask, what happened to you?
Did that lady... lean on Wally, too?
Gee, I guess so.
I think Wally needs a vacation. He'll probably
That's
put in for one today.
That's the assignment he had for a long time.
You know, hardly a day goes by now that you don't read something about these tranquilizers in the newspapers or magazines, and so we sent our highly controversial Wally Ballou out to cover it. The story on tranquilizers, and today he's at a tranquilizer factory somewhere in eastern United States. So come in, please, Wally Ballou.
From Brattleboro, Vermont, this is Wally Ballou at the Sleepy Time Laboratories, where we're going to speak with some of the men who are helping to calm down the people of the United States. First, Mr. Thurston Perdue. Perdue is the... plant manager here at Sleepy Time.
Yes, sir.
And I'd just like to say hello, Mr. Perdue, and say hello to all of our listeners.
Hello!
I notice you're going full tilt here at Sleepy Time, turning out tranquilizers by the carload, I'd say.
That's right. We turn out all about...
you don't need to be nervous, sir. We're just on the radio.
Yes.
No cameras or anything. Oh, here comes Mr. Perdue's assistant, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, boss. Where's the first cart you made this morning?
Now they're checking.
I don't know. Look at me.
Carton's day this morning.
Well, it's about it, isn't it? I don't think so.
Sleepy Time is one of the leading producers of
chicken shipping.
Okay. He say it was part of the chicken shipping department. What do chickens have to do with tranquilizers?
No, shipping.
Oh.
Shipping department.
I was going to say that. This is one of the.
Shadow on the wall, scared me.
Well, lights are a little bit strange in here, kind of eerie, and I suppose that's to calm down the employees. I didn't mean to turn that quickly.
Just turn very slowly, will you, when you address me? I'd appreciate it very much.
How many tranquilizers do you turn out in a day, Mr. Perdue?
You mean individual tablets?
Yes.
Oh, maybe 6,000, 7,000?
And they go like hotcakes, I guess.
Yes.
Judging from the... From the records here.
I thought
what's
you were going to fall there for a minute.
Oh, no, I just kind of leaned over the railing
there.
One of the other... And the operation is going full speed ahead here at Sleepy Time. So that America's been...
What's that?
That's the lunch bell. There's the boss again. And so amidst this scene of busy industrial activity...
Watch the machine there, please.
All right, see
Please, watch it.
This is Wally Ballou at the Sleepy Time Laboratory. Setting it back.
What do you know about that? Well, that's the story on tranquilizers. Thank you, Wally Ballou.
Well, we haven't heard any music from you for quite some time now. Are you still practicing every day?
Well?
You're still practicing on Hammond organ?
Yes, sir. I practice whenever I get an opportunity over. There's a store on Fifth Avenue that sells them.
Oh, and they let you come in and practice?
Well, I make like I'm going to buy one at any minute.
I should think that can only happen for a couple of times and then they get wise to you.
Well, I've done it for four or five times. And the salesman looks at me with kind of a fish eye.
Sure, I should imagine. But it is one way of getting that practice, that all-important practice time in.
Yes, sir.
And, of course, it shows up in your work.
Does it?
Are you going to favor us with anything today?
I don't believe so, Bob, because, you see, I hurt my fingers.
Oh, what happened there? I noticed all bandaged up.
Well, it was changing a tire again.
Oh, well, it wasn't on... Our automobiles.
No, it was some big truck. And as I was going by my bicycle, the truck driver said, "Hey, you there!"
Looking at you.
Yes, I said, "What?" He said, "Change my tire or I'll give you a fat lip."
So what did you do, Webb?
Well, I changed the tire.
Jizzy, you've never seen him before?
Never seen him before. He just scared me.
He must have been real grateful after you finished that.
Yes, he was. He thanked me very, very much, gave me a dime.
Well, it wasn't a total loss then, huh?
Those are very big tires, you know.
Sure, I know they are. You hurt your hand pretty badly.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, drop by the Bob and Ray dispensary, maybe.
Well, you see, the truck was loaded with scrap metal.
Mm-hmm. Well, you better relax then.
And he didn't have a jack. I had to hold it on my back.
Oh, that makes it more difficult,
yeah,
of course.
Every single day, I swear.
Well,
I don't know how you can do it.
Sore hand, that's probably the reason for it.
That's the reason.
And now, it's time to call in correspondent Wally Ballou, who is in Barberton, North Carolina, with another one of his interesting interviews. So let's call him in right now. Come in, please, Wally Ballou in Barberton, North Carolina. Oh, doesn't this get your
goat? Nice whoopee down there. Come in, Wally Ballou.
Doesn't this get your goat? He knows the cue as well as you and I do.
Is it Wally or the fellas in the control room? Again, Bob and Ray calling in Wally Ballou, Barberton, North Carolina.
Ballou in Barberton, North Carolina, the heart of the tobacco country. Little of us realize that along with the making of cigarettes, the manufacture of filters is a big product, too. And we've taken our microphones today to a cigarette filter factory. And I'm speaking with Mr. Prowse, the manager of the factory, who's standing over here in Warehouse 6. Mr. Prowse?
Yes, sir?
Tell me this.
L.E. Prowse, initials only.
What's that?
L.E. Prowse, initials only.
I see. You don't have any first name then, Mr. Prowse.
Well, L.E.
L.E.
Initials.
Well, I'll just call you Mr. Prowse, if I may.
That's what most people call me when they know me, yes.
Sure. Now, these filters that you're making here, they're made out of, what is this, spun glass or something?
No, it's cotton candy. We make filters here for candy cigarettes.
Oh. Well, I was under the impression you were making them for the regular tobacco kind.
No, these are completely edible and they're sweet. They're mostly spun sugar.
Well,
much in the manner of cotton candy that you find at your carnivals throughout your summer season.
Misapprehension down here, then.
I see.
Do you have any testimonials from doctors about these candy cigarettes you're making?
No, we're just about ready for our advertising campaign. We're going to call in a few doctors. And we're going to use a lot of kids who have doctor kits to endorse them.
I see.
Rather than professional doctors.
And how are the sales? Are they pretty good this year?
Yes, we find that with the increased consumption now of candy cigarettes, naturally there'll be a bigger market for candy filters to go on the end of them.
Suppose they're switching over to...
However, we haven't lengthened them too much, the cigarette itself. We're trying to keep that down.
I see. You got to cut out...
That's a money thing there.
Sure. Well, the filter cuts a little bit off the candy.
It's all edible, all the way around, except the cardboard around it.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm afraid a lot of kids will go ahead and eat it. But that's their worry, you know what?
I suppose it is, Mr. Prowse.
Not mine.
Well, look at it that way. You're covered legally.
Can't be with it if they're going to swallow the cardboard around it. It's not my fault.
Once it leaves your hands.
And I can't print on it. It's too small. The print don't eat it on it.
Well, then that's the worry of the little kids. I have a little fellow.
The kids worry for themselves. You know, I mean,
Your sampler over here, isn't it? Your taster?
That's right.
I wonder if we can speak to little Jimmy Schwab over here. Come over here, Jimmy. Is that a real tattoo on your wrist there?
Golly gee, no. It's painted on.
Uh-huh. And I want you to try one of these candy filter cigarettes and see how you like it.
Okay.
Oh, see?
Criminally, that's good, but
he's eating the cardboard.
That's his own fault.
Well, I know, but...
The nitwit of a kid.
Okay, well, thanks very much. And it's so long from Barberton, North Carolina. And the candy filter cigarette factory, Wally Ballou, bringing you the description. Now back to radio...
Well, it's been ages since we've contacted Bob and Ray's private weather forecaster at Top Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
Is he still up there? It is.
Well, yeah, Cliff is still there. And why don't we call him in right now and see what the weather picture is and so forth. Come in, please. Cliff Fleming at Top Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
Fleming, Dave, and good to talk to you again over the radio.
Been a long time since we talked with you, Cliff.
The weather picture is good, seasonable weather, and actually is being outshone, Dave, by the fact that an eclipse of the moon is in prospect for November 17th.
Oh, is that so?
I wanted to give you a little bit of advance notice of it, Dave, because the next one won't happen until April 8th, the year 2024.
Is that so?
Hmm?
I just was saying, is that so?
Well, now, the eclipse of the moon, Dave... is always staged for a small and select audience. A total eclipse of the sun can be seen only by observers who are in the narrow and not very long path that's swept across the earth by the tip of the moon's shadow. Wait just a minute, Dave. I'm giving you information on an eclipse of the sun.
Well, Cliff, just a second. Since when have you
they
concerned
might check
you...
my notes here, Dave.
Well, since when have you concerned yourself with eclipses and so forth?
Well, it's part of the study of weather, and we like to see the phenomena as it occurs when it's so infrequent.
Hmm.
It's November 17th, Dave. I'll try to have more on it next week.
Well, Cliff, I don't know. I suppose there are some people interested in eclipses, but I don't think we're paying you for that. What we wanted was a long-range weather forecast for the nation. That's what we have.
Well, seasonable weather, Dave, as we move along toward December, we'll be getting more and more cold weather and eventually snow, followed, of course, by the spring thaws. The buds are blossoming forth in April, May, and into warm weather by next July or August, Dave.
Okay, that's
the way it looks from here anyway.
Thank you very much. Clifford Fleming, Bob and Ray's private weather forecaster, stationed atop Washington,
Dave,
in New Hampshire. Now to Methuen, Massachusetts.
That's Methuen, Ray.
Oh, Methuen, Massachusetts.
Weren't you born about 5 miles from there?
Yes, isn't that funny? I've done that all my life. Now then to Matthew in Massachusetts and Wally Ballou. Obviously, Mr. Ballou doesn't know he's on the air. So let's attempt
one of our ace engineers with him, I should think.
Well, let's try once again, shall we? Up in Matthew in Massachusetts.
Methuen.
And Wally Ballou.
Ballou from the Methuen Works here, the Eastern Regional Plant. What's that, Charlie?
Well, having a little difficulty here. Control room, everything seems to be all right. It's a matter now, I think, of just coordinating our signals. If you could...
Yeah, I know he is, but he's going to call us when we go on. Or how are we going to know? He's on or off? What?
Engineer... could you check through and contact the engineer on the scene at Methuen?
Hello, Bob and Ray. Anytime you're ready, I'll count three and be all set.
Wally Ballou is counting three, so now quickly.
Two.
Oh, wait a minute. This is... let's try once
Somebody's
again.
Somebody's nervous, I think, on the...
Three. Hello, Bob and Ray.
This is Bob and Ray in New York.
It would come through good if he...
Bob and Ray in New York calling Wally Ballou in Methuen, Massachusetts. Come in, please.
Picture from here, and until next time, this is Wally Ballou and my broadcasting companion, Artie Skirmerhorn, saying thanks a lot for listening, and now back to...
I'm awfully sorry, friends. We'll try to do this again.
It was very interesting. Now, let's see what this is. Take time out to enjoy a little refreshment. Tony, what do we have for the folks today, huh?
Well, that's right, Walter. This is eating time. We have some rye bread for everybody sent over from the Rye Bread Institute.
That's good, that's good. What else?
Jelly donut, Walter.
A jelly donut, huh?
That's right, Walter. Sent over from the Jelly Institute.
So it shouldn't be a total loss. What else?
Walter.
This is National Antifreeze Week. Everybody get a little paper cup full of antifreeze?
Well, we forgot that, Walter.
This is National Save the Horse Week.
That's right, Walter.
We got a couple of beauties I want to bring out for you. Now, would you leave that Arabian stallion out here, please?
It's a beautiful horse, Walter.
Isn't he a beauty?
That's right,
Walter. Climb up on him, Tony. Just show the folks, huh?
Well,
we got the high hurdle set up over there at the far end of the studio.
Well,
and I want to show you what a jumper this steed is. He's tame. You get up on him there.
Walter, may fall off.
You won't fall off. Hang on to the reins there, see? He can do this by himself. Just up. That's the way. Now start out and take the high hurdle, Tony. Missed it that time.
How about to get down now, Walter?
You're down, boy. That was all right. You notice how that horse just seemed to know how to take the hurdle there all by himself? Tony? Oh, Tony. Well, let's get on with the show then, huh? Somebody get him out.
Our sports reporter, Biff Burns, is down outside. Something interesting going on down there. So, Biff, if you read me, come in, please.
Thing indeed, Ray. This is Biff Burns speaking from Rockefeller Plaza, where a group of sports car enthusiasts are warming up their motors, preparatory to taking an afternoon spin. We're going to speak with one or two of them.
Lance
Turlinghausen. Is Turlinghausen your last name or your first name?
Lance is my first name. Turlinghausen is my last name.
What do you call this car of yours here, Lance?
Well, this is a jazzed-up six-cylinder job with fuel injection, and I've got a four-barrel carburetor on this thing.
Certainly a classy-looking job. Did you do most of the work on it yourself?
Yeah, quite a bit of it myself. Some work I can't do. I don't have the equipment.
I imagine the body was formed by a professional.
You imagine wrong, fella, because the body was designed by myself. And build at a factory according to my own specifications.
It certainly is a smooth, streamlined effect you've got there.
Well, no, actually, it isn't what we're striving for in this little baby. It's kind of a square-up model. Not so much speed here. It's just what I want is consistency in this motor.
How come the flower pots there? And
the old lady insists on that.
You can probably hear the hum of the powerful motor there
in
the background.
That's not a hum. That's a bad sound. It sounds like one of my main bearings is on the caboose.
That's down. How much speed can you get out of this, Lance?
Steadily, I go get a good 45, 50 steady. I mean, country town traffic. As I pointed out to you early, the only thing I want here is just, you know, steady performance, not so much record-breaking speed.
I see. Well, you certainly have got what you wanted, I guess, and we wish you a lot of luck with this car.
Okay, Beth.
Let's give the motor a real good turnover. Let's hear it before you.
Well, hold your microphone down there by the hood. You can get it real good if you want to.
All right.
Let me get this thing all revved up.
Here from Rockefeller Plaza, and now back. Well, to get serious for a few moments, we have a guest here to represent our scientific department of Bob and Ray Enterprises, a gentleman who is the field director of one of the largest observatories in the East. And we're going to turn our attention to astronomy now as we present Dr. Arlington Garment. Garment, what can we look for in the heavens this month of December?
Well, quite a bit.
What's that?
I said quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
Sky watches of the northern hemisphere have one misfortune. It's that December brings them the most brilliant and fascinating area in the heavens.
Yes.
But to spend as much time as they would like to spend outdoors, they must suffer discomforts of shivering, sniffling, the coldest nights of the year.
Well, how many nights in December so far have you spent watching the skies?
About four.
Only
I've
four?
I've come up with a little head cold. A word of caution, then, to beginners, to bundle up.
I guess you weren't...
Much more warmly than you would ordinarily think necessary.
I hope I'm not catching this. Thank you very much, Dr. Garment.
Stay up a little late tonight. They go out about 1:30 and look at Jupiter.
Oh, well, look, Doctor, that's a little bit better things to do at 1:30 than
if
that.
If you don't object to an early alarm clock, set it to get you outdoors not later than 6:10. Venus, Saturn, and the old moon will be worth seeing before the dawn becomes too bright.
Yeah, well...
They'll be low over the southeast and the moon.
Fine. There you have the picture in astronomy for this week from Dr. Arlington Garment. Our Bob and Ray staff staff astronomer.
Right.
Well, we thought it might be nice right now. Is that light blinking on the phone there?
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to hold off what we were going to do. This could be important. Hello?
Hello, Bob?
This is Bob.
Hey, Ray, how are you,
fella. Well, this is Dave Bob. Roscoe. Hey, Ray, hope you have a good and happy new year for
Steve,
yourself. Bob, where are you, Ray, boy?
This is Bob, Steve. Wait a minute. It's
hey,
Steve.
Bob, Steve.
Right.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Hey, what do you think of all those ball games?
Oh, they were real good.
How you doing, fella?
They
hey, did you have a happy new year?
Yes, wonderful, Steve.
Hey, that's
Steve. Haven't heard from you for several weeks now.
Hey, Bob.
Yes?
Happy new year, fella. Yeah. Hey, look, Bob.
Yes.
Steve here.
Right.
Hey, look, I need some money.
Well, now, wait.
I want to head down to Clearwater, Florida, take a look at some of the baseball teams.
Well, one
Bob.
Thing, now, the spring training doesn't start for a couple of months yet, at least, and this is kind of early to be going down there, don't you think?
How you doing? Hey, did you have a happy new year?
Yeah, well, real
hey,
nice.
Hey, good, Bob. Say happy new year to Ray.
Listen, we haven't had any reports from you for months.
Bob, now. This is Steve.
Right,
hey,
I
hey, how you doing? Hey, look, I need some money. I want to go down and cover the spring training of a baseball
well,
team.
Well,
I want to go to Clearwater.
They make sure you call us and give us reports?
Yeah.
Send it?
How you going, Bob? I hear you all the time, every
okay.
afternoon and mornings.
Wonderful.
And nights. I listen to you. Hey.
Yes.
Happy New Year, Bob.
Same to you, and we'll get the money off if we can be promised a report for next week.
Hey, would you send about $600, Bob?
Where'll I send it?
To the most expensive hotel in Clearwater. And now, this is Steve Bosco, Ronnie Third, being thrown out at home.
Now it's eating time, huh? What do we have in the way of refreshments, Tony?
Raisin toast, Arthur.
Raisin toast?
That's right, Arthur.
Isn't this National Donut Week?
I didn't know that, Arthur.
It's what it says here.
Well, we don't have any donuts, Arthur.
National Donut Week.
We have raisin toast sent over from the...
National Donut Week. All of our folks here in the studio should receive a donut.
Sent over from the Raisin Institute, Arthur.
To commemorate the event, we can hand each one of them a donut, huh?
We don't have any, Arthur.
We don't have any donuts for them?
No, we don't, Arthur.
This is National Donut Week.
Well, I'm sorry, Arthur, but I'm not in charge of this.
Well, I thought you took care of all of the arrangements.
Well, I do not, Arthur.
I suppose you don't know that the 31st is National Apple Day. Do we all have an apple for everybody?
Well, no, we haven't, Arthur. No apples here at all, Arthur.
Well, who's in charge of this stuff anyway?
I don't know,
Arthur. You certainly... What have you been doing with your time? No preparation whatsoever.
Sorry, Arthur.
I want to see you right after the show.
All right, Arthur.
You know where my office is.
I don't have a pass to get up there, Arthur.
I expect you right after the show. Now back inside.
Well, Tex, it's good to see you back
yeah.
in here at our little isolation booth, as they call it.
You get time to do the... poem there before.
How many, what do they call them, stanzas do you have to that?
Yeah, I don't know. There's just a few.
Bucktooth Calhoun wrote this for you, didn't he?
He wrote it and at different times. He wrote a couple of stanzas of it one year, and then
mm-hmm.
during the year he wrote a few more.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, why don't you run through a few of the stanzas now? We have Webley at the console of the organ, and he's prepared to give you appropriate background. And we'd all love to hear, I'm sure,
well,
Cowboys Christmas Eve
fine.
In Manhattan.
I'll go over here on the great stage and recite it. Give me a yellow spotlight. He was stranded in Manhattan on the night of Christmas Eve. He was in a strange new country, was the cowpoke known as Steve. And he lugged his heavy saddle down Broadway, this young cowpoke. He had no horse, he had no dough. This youngster, he was broke. And as he struggled bravely against lights green and red, he wished it once, he wished it twice, he wished that he was dead. Steve missed the mesquite and the brush, he missed the desert grim, and many, many times by providence the taxicabs missed him. He lost his way on Broadway when the evening it got dark, and soon he lugged his saddle to the avenue they call Park. The limousines kept whizzing by, filled with women wearing jewels. And Steve kept thinking bitterly, them city dames is
fools.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand that.
Jewels and fools.
Oh, all right.
Poetic license. There was one dame among them who was kind and sweet and clean, and when she ran over the cowpoke, she said, "Stop the limousine." And she stopped out in the muddy street to see if he was kilt. And as she mopped his fevered brow, she seen how he was built, for he was a strong young cowpoke built like a Douglas fir. She fell in love with him at once and took him home with her.
Not nice.
So they was happily married, and this thought with you I leave. Go get yourself a saddle and get lost on Christmas Eve in Manhattan. Had that left over.
Well, I think that was very nice, Peck. I hope you do have a happy Christmas here in Manhattan.
And a Merry Christmas to you, too.
And we have a wonderful offer for all of you kids who are planning to go back to school within the next few days, the next few weeks anyway.
Well, that's for sure. Of course, the Labor Day weekend always means that it's back to school time, and so we've come out with the Bob and Ray Back to School Kit for this year, and we think it's a real peachy one, too.
It's got everything in it you need to get back to school and get good marks, kids, and to live happily, too.
Right. Here's some things that it contains. First of all, there'll be the corduroy knickers. Now, these will really sing as you walk along the street, and I might point out that these knickers also come complete with a rattan repeller in the seat.
You'll get a whole 6 month supply of prefabricated paper wads. Throw them around the schoolroom. Have fun.
A waxed apple to put on the teacher's desk containing a waxed worm.
You'll get a whole set of phony excuse notes, handwritten, and covering any emergency that you may have, being late, absent, or anything else.
Listen here, gang. How about this one? Also contained in the kit, imitation measles spots for going home early on Friday. Also in the kit is an ink eradicator, large white shirt cuffs for writing answers on.
And, Ray, I don't think you've covered the special binder for comic books, have you?
No, I guess I neglected that.
It says Latin on the outside, but inside all of your favorite popular comic books.
Hey, and don't forget, also included is a wonderful scholar's companion for college students of blue-eyed blonde. Well, that's it, kids. If you're interested now for the Bob and Ray Back to School Kit, hurry and let us know. Just write to Truant, New York.